You are getting ready to listen to the voice of Dr. Roddy Ferguson,
2004 Olympian,
four-time national judo champion, Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt, author, speaker, and coach.
Dr. Roddy Ferguson, 2004 Olympian, four-time national judo champion, Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt, author, speaker, and coach. Welcome to another edition of Coffee with Roddy. Man, I've had a wonderful time this particular football season watching my son navigate the gridiron and everything that goes along with it. I've had the opportunity to watch him, his teammates, parents, staff, the band, the opposing teams. And man, I really learned a lot. You know, I coach for a living, so I'm always, you know, analyzing and watching and breaking things down and looking at the best way to do things. And I find myself in the seat that I sit in now with my son to kind of try to repress myself or suppress those mental machinations that go on during the game and just try to watch and enjoy. But I think deep down, the engineer in me is always looking at things on a systemic level and thinking how I can make the process better or what can be done better. I had the distinct pleasure and privilege of playing football at Howard University. And while I was there, we won two Black College National Championships, one season going undefeated and losing in the playoffs, being 11-1, and another one 10-2. I played in bowl games. I also played an all-star game in my senior year. And also won four national judo championships. And I was able to go to the Olympics in 2004. And the reason why I say that, I don't say that in order to resume drop. That's not the issue. I say that because I've had more losing seasons than I've had winning seasons. And if I'm an expert in anything, I'm an expert in how to lose. I can tell you exactly how to lose. I know exactly how to lose. You lose by not preparing. You lose by not believing. You lose by not being cohesive. You lose by not thinking like a unit. You lose by not believing in the person next to you. You lose by not making the necessary sacrifices. And you lose because you desire comfort over discomfort, and that's why you lose. And I'm an expert in losing. I know exactly how to lose. And I've coached people who have lost. I've coached people to losing. I've lost consistently. All right. And most people do. I mean, if you look at Michael Jordan, you think about his six championships, man, how many seasons did he play when he did not win? A lot. He's an expert also at losing. I can tell you this, I've had an opportunity to win too. The crazy thing about winning is that winning starts in the same place that losing does. It starts in the mind. Now, man, the Bible says, man, as a man thinketh, so is he. And on a colloquial level, we say that the eyes are the windows to the soul. And if you look in a man's eyes in a combat sport, you can damn near see his soul. And you can also understand the desires of his heart. I don't think that many teams take the time to look at their teammates in the eyes and specifically ask them if they believe that they can win, and then not listen to the answer, but look through their eyes into their soul and see the desires of their heart. Because their actions will tell you, their posture, their positioning, their facial features. And you'll know. It's very, very easy, man. When I look at a football team, I mean, it's very easy. I showed my son college football film and high school football film of me for the first time 2 weeks ago. I said, why didn't you show him any video before? My dad was like, man, you got to show him some video. I said, no, I don't want to show him any video. I don't want to put the same pressure on him that he had when he played judo. But I showed him some video later. And he said, daddy, man, you were really aggressive on the field. I said, you have to be aggressive in college. People say, oh, you won't play. What the hell? And I asked him if he saw the difference between a Division I football player and regular football players on the field in high school. He said, yes. I said, what's the difference? He said, man, a D1 athlete takes over the game. I said, exactly. I said, you know you're getting the ball. They know you're getting the ball. The people in the stands know you're getting the ball. The announcer up top knows you're getting the ball. The other coach on the other side knows you're getting the ball. The linebacker in front of you knows you're getting the ball. The quarterback knows he's giving you the ball. And you get the ball anyway, and they just cannot stop you. And you don't believe that you can be stopped. This is the difference. My son said, daddy, you never walked on the football field. I said, no, son, I didn't. And my teammates didn't either, if you noticed. I said, you noticed that there's some people walked in high school, but I said, nobody walked in college. And I played on a 1-9 football team in high school. But little things like running on the field, running off the field, like anytime my feet, my dad told me this, anytime my feet were on a football field, I never walked. I never walked. Ever. Like you don't walk on a football field. I mean, you just don't do it. I can tell you right now, I mean, I watch Friday Night Football and it's a huge difference. The team who is going to win walks less on the field than the team who loses. I'm telling you, I've watched it. If I could jot down the twos and fews from what I learned from watching football, man, on high school, because I haven't watched high school football in a long time since I went to the state championships a couple years ago. Like the small things of everybody having on the same socks and everybody having on the same, like this, the same accessories or the same color accessories, and everybody having the everybody walking on the field at the same time. Oh, you know, walking out the tunnel and everybody running on the field at the same time and everybody cheering on the sidelines for the team at the same time. Like those things, man, they make a huge difference. It has nothing to do with the play calling. Man, I remember I was playing at Howard, and the first play of the game was a fly route to a guy by the name of Gary Harrell, who we called the Flea. Like, nobody starts the game, man, with a fly route. Man, we just believed that, I mean, we had a guy by the name of Jay Walker who played quarterback and went to the NFL, so did Flea. We just believed that no matter what you call, we can run it and get it done. So the play calling and second-guessing play calling and doing all those things have nothing to do with winning. Like, winning starts at the same place that losing starts. It starts with belief. It's crazy, man. The things that you can do when you believe are crazy. Like, I remember telling my son when he was playing judo, I said, Rufus, did you realize all the matches that you thought you were going to win, you won, and all the matches that you thought you were going to lose, you lost? He said, yeah, that's correct. I said, right, when he intimidated himself and he thought he was going to lose the match, man, he lost the match. When he looked over and saw the guy and he thought he was going to win the match, then he won the match. My son has never won any dog fights. And I told him that. I said, man, you haven't won the dog fights. Those fights where it looks like you're going to lose. Everybody thinks you're going to lose. But you're the only person and the person in your chair. Those are the only people who think you're going to win. Those are the type of matches you got to win. Those are the rough matches. The dog fights, man, are the rough matches. I remember I had a dog fight against a dude from Ukraine at the New York Open. He was a number two dude out of Ukraine at 100 kilos. Man, dog fight. I ended up winning. Dog fight. I mean, massive dog fight. Rough. But you need those times when everything looks bad. Man, I'm telling you, man, it's easy, man. It's easy to jump. See the jump ship and bail when stuff is looking bad. It don't look bad. It's hard to believe when stuff is looking bad. This is hard. It's difficult. When things get bad and things get tough, most people quit. That's how it is. Most people quit. Most people stop. And I watch and I'm looking for, and every group, all right, every group, I don't care if it's, you're talking about humans or you're talking about animals, in every group, all right, even with ants or bees or bison or cattle or ducks, in every group, all right, if you sit back and you observe long enough, like predators do, you can assess and find out who the leader of the group is. You can also sit back and find out who the cancer is. You can also sit back and find out the weak people. Because, man, there are weak people in a group. There are weak people in a group. Okay, what'd you say, man? I mean, every litter has some runts in it. That's how it goes. But when you look at a group, and it's very difficult to assess who the leader is, that group has a problem. It has a problem because either it is, because it's a leader less because of the egos in the group, or it's leaderless because there's a person in that group who has not become the leader that they're supposed to be. Maybe because of fear, maybe because they think they're too young, maybe because they think they're too slow, maybe because they think they don't start, or they're not the best on the team. Or maybe because the team hasn't been heated up enough. Sometimes you gotta heat up the team and make that pot boil, get that steam off, and work yourself all the way down to the bare essentials, to what the flavor is. Sometimes the team hasn't been heated up enough. And sometimes circumstances are created so that the heat is applied so that the leader can come forward. But if that leader is not available, the team can't move forward. I've watched this in high school. The tough part this year with COVID, which with all the schools in the area, they all didn't have the same amount of practice time that you usually get. Everybody's practice time, practice schedule was different based upon COVID and infection rates and if somebody came up positive, et cetera. So things were very different in Florida, but it was cool to watch. It's cool to watch the teams that were undefeated, Like it was, we played an undefeated team last weekend. It was cool to watch the undefeated team. The confidence that they exuded when they walked on the field. I stood by the bathroom, okay? Just to let, I coach. I stood by the bathroom because all the teams have to come use the same bathroom half the time. I stood by the bathroom because I wanted to see the face and the posture and the attitudes of the kids from both teams as they went in to use the bathroom. And I watched them when they came out. Man, the kids on the other team, chest up, shoulders back, walking to the bathroom, walking around our campus like they own the joint. In the bathroom, coaches confident, in and out. Our kids running to the bathroom, talking to the girls on the way. Different. Just completely different. Completely different. Completely different level of focus. And the thing that I notice from being on teams is, man, you don't need an off season to make those small changes. You can make them changes right away. Boom. You can make a decision right away. It's like now you're driving your car sometimes and you're tired. And you almost get in an accident and then whoom, everything gets neurally heightened and you're awake. Well, losing does that for some people who care. Because to some people, a loss chips away at them like a death. Like some people just don't like to lose. Like there's some people who don't like to lose. I have a friend that don't want to play Scrabble with me because they don't want to lose. Because I'm gonna damn sure beat you if we play. Now that's a fact now. But they don't want to lose. So they don't really want to play. But you play me, you're gonna lose. Because I'm playing to win. And I believe I'm going to win. And I want to say this to parents, any parent, all right? If your child is playing a sport, make sure your child understands the lesson of being coachable, the lessons of leadership, the lessons of management, the lessons of belief, the lessons of faith. And make sure that you empower your child. Like when my kid doesn't play, my ex-wife, my former wife and I tell him the same thing. When he doesn't play, we say, hey man, that's how it goes. And that's how it goes. Listen, that's how it goes. No, I'm not gonna complain with him. No. Do I feel bad sometimes when he doesn't play? Yeah, I'm a dad, man, and my ego's tied up into my kid too. But hey, when he doesn't play, we just tell him, that's how it goes. He plays, he doesn't play. That has nothing to do. Saturday came around, he got his ass in the weight room, power cleans, deadlift, bench press, and hamstring curls. That's it. No matter what happens, you still got to live. You still got to be prepared. You can't control whether they put you in the game or not. Only thing you control is your preparation when you get in. That's it. That's how it goes. I talked to him. I said, hey, man, you feel bad about not playing? He said, yeah, daddy, a little bit. I said, hey, man, that's how it goes. Sometimes you're going to play. Sometimes you're not going to play. Sometimes you're going to be hurt, so you can't play. So every time you get in to play, make sure you play to the best of your ability and make sure you're ready when they call you. All you can do is be ready when they call you. That's it. Sulking, whining and crying. And I'm going to tell you this, and I don't have to learn this from watching Friday Night Football I'm going to tell you this from coaching and coaching kids inside a dojo. I'm going to tell all you parents, listen, some of you are raising whiny little bitches. Okay. That's it. You're raising whiny little bitches. They whine and they cry. And I didn't do this. And I didn't get this. And I didn't get to play. And I didn't get. So what? So what? Maybe your kid is a D1 prospect. If your kid is a D1 prospect and you're a junior or senior, your kid's in the game anyway. So, okay. If your kid's not a D1 prospect, your kid's not in the game, your kid's not in the game. That's it. Learn how to be part of a team. Get on scout team. Be the best damn scout team player ever. But stop raising these whiny fucking bitches. Yes, I said it like that. You raise them to whine. You raise them to cry. No, there's no whining and no crying. You know what you tell them? You say, hey, man, that's how it is. That's how it goes. The one thing that you'll never hear my kids say that I got smacked in the face for when I was coming up is you'll never hear my kids say, that's not fair. Man, boy, what? When I was coming up, my mom did not allow me to say, that's not fair. My mom, she had no empathy in terms of fairness. She did not care about fairness. Fairness, like, my mom grew up as a young black woman in the 60s. Shit wasn't fair for her, nor was she concerned with your fairness or your desire for fairness. Your job is to do your job to the best of your ability and then some. To hell with fair. Man, I never, in my house, I could never say, oh, so-and-so, it wasn't fair. So what? Life's not going to be fair. You're going to get bad calls. Things aren't going to work out. And guess what? That's how it goes. And that's it. And you need to tell your kids that. And stop calling your kids and whipping out your titty every 5-10 minutes trying to give them some breast milk. Hey, that's how it goes. Go drink you some water and sit down. My son, 4 weeks ago, sprained his ankle real bad. Sprained his ankle. He said, Daddy, man, I sprained my ankle bad. I don't think I can play. I said, buddy, you're going to be in practice on Tuesday. I said, I'll text the coach and let him know that we need some time to get you in this ice bucket day in and day out. But in 72 hours, buddy, I said, your ass is going on that football field. He told me, Daddy, when you're hurt, you don't have to get dressed. I said, oh, no, buddy. I said, it doesn't work like that. I said, you will get dressed. I said, you will dress out. Hurt or not, you will dress out. And that's that. But then my ankle is hurting. I said, go put all your shit on and run your ass on that field. And if you can't play with your ankle hurt, then you need to let me know so that we could pull you off the football team so you don't have to worry about playing. Because if you can't play hurt, then you can't play. Now, there was a dude on my son's football team who hurt his ankle. I don't know the dude's name. I don't mind talking about it because it's what it is. He hurt his ankle and he sat out a game and he didn't play. And then he was available for the next game. And I asked my son, I said, do you think he could have played? He said, yeah, Dad, I think he could have played. I said, and you know that now because of what? He says, I know that now because I played. I said, right. I said, but the problem that you gonna have, son, I said, is if he did that, I said, you all aren't ready to play for each other yet. I said, you guys are still playing for yourselves. I said, and the lesson I was trying to tell you is that your ankle in the grand scheme of things doesn't mean shit in comparison to the goal of the team. The team needs you to sacrifice your ankle. Yeah. So, okay. He sprains his ankle. Okay, so he tears his ligament. Okay, so he has to get surgery. All right, so his ankle, that's how it goes. Football, judo, jiu-jitsu, MMA, boxing, these are hard sports. These are blood sports. These are sports where people are out there to hurt you so that you make a different decision in the physiological realm. They try to control you psychologically with the hurt and the pain so that physiologically you make a different decision. Physically, you make a different decision. That's the sport. And what I see on Friday night is I see some people who are not willing to deal with pain and discomfort. And why is that this important? Because these people, I'm not talking about just my son's team, I'm talking about what I see on Friday nights, because these people are going to run the country later. And they are weak. And they are soft. They are bitches. And parents, it's your fault. Now, I was just in a group today where they were having arguments about men crying and showing emotion and all this stuff. And I said, they were talking about the phrase that some men use with their boys, and they say, hey, man, suck it up, don't cry. Now, do I have a problem with boys and men showing emotion? No. Do I cry? Yes. Does my dad cry? Yes. Can you cry all the time? No. There are certain things and certain ways that you have to train, especially young men, that some women don't know or not aware of, or I don't know if they don't want to be aware of, or I don't know. I don't know. If I knew what women were thinking, I'd be a lot better off than I am right now. I do know this. My son can cry. He just can't cry and not get done what he needs to get done. Now, if your crying is going to stop you from getting done what we need to get done, then you can't cry. I tell my daughter too. I say, you can cry while you're doing what I ask you to do. Cry and type the paper, do the dissertation. Cry and climb the rope. Cry and run the sprints. Cry and do the throws. Cry and hit the bag. Cry and get on the aerodyne machine. But don't cry in place of doing the work. So you crying, that's why people say, we don't have time for that. Because we have shit to do. Yeah, I went through a divorce. Did I cry? Yeah, I cried while I was getting my shit together. You can't just cry and then just... Man, God forbid something happens traumatic, boom, bam, somebody gets shot or somebody gets cut, or you got to defend somebody and they get hurt and you get emotional about it. You can't stop and cry when the fight is going on. And this is what I had to tell somebody. There are some people who are raising warriors and some who aren't. And yes, the people on the front lines in the military and the Marines and the Army, et cetera, yeah, they cry. They cry. They might cry in the middle of a gunfight. Maybe. But most people who are in combat or combat sports, they have what's called emotional regulation and emotional detachment, meaning they detach themselves from their emotions in order to get a task done. And then they attach themselves to their emotions when the task is finished. But they have a lot of practice of detaching themselves from emotions so that when turmoil comes, they detach themselves from emotions and they get very task-oriented to get the task done. And if you are a general popper and you don't understand these things, understand how to function on that particular level, or you never punched anybody in the fucking face or been punched in your face or been hit hard or have hit somebody with the intent to hurt, maim, and kill them and let the rules save them, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. You need to shut the fuck up. Because if you train somebody to step in the cage of the UFC or MMA with the potential of them dying, they need to learn how to detach their emotions for 15 minutes or 25 minutes. They need to learn how to detach themselves from the pain that they feel, because everything in them would tell them to stop when they need to keep going. And they're pushing themselves close to the line of death so that they can win. Yes. And there has to be some emotional regulation or emotional detachment that occurs with that. I heard Kurt Angle explain it the best. He was on a WWE episode with Stone Cold Steve Austin. And he was asking, Stone Cold Steve Austin was asking the difference between wrestling and professional wrestling. He said, well, the difference between wrestling and professional wrestling, in professional wrestling, he said, you have to overshow your emotions and over flaunt things, you know, for television and for the art of wrestling. He said, and amateur wrestling and Olympic style wrestling, he said, man, you shut off all of your emotions. He said, so the two things were totally different. Yeah, man, because how you feel has nothing to do with what the task is. And some parents, what I see on Friday nights, is they're not preparing their kids during the year and Monday through Thursday and on Saturdays to deal with discomfort, deal with pain, deal with a little bit of hurt, deal with disappointment. And they're not willing to tell their kids, hey, man, that's just how it goes. You win some, you lose some. You get hurt, you don't get hurt. That's how it goes. Whether you're hurt or not, you got practice on Mondays. You're going to practice Monday. You're going. Now, even when Rufus went to practice that Monday, he still got dressed. He didn't practice until Tuesday physically, but he still got dressed. Your kids are hurt. Your kids are hurt. You got your kids on the football team and they're hurt and they're going to practice and they're not dressing. My kid's hurt. Yeah, your kid's hurt, ma'am, sir. Kid's hurt. Hurt. Your kid's hurt. Kid's not injured. My football coach in junior high school said, can you walk? I said, yeah. He said, if you can walk, you can run. If you can run, you can play. I was like, man, that's not true. That's not true. Until I seen Art Monk, who used to play for the Washington Redskins, play a whole season with a torn hamstring, scar tissue buildup and everything. Until I realized that you can play with a pulled muscle, because I did it. Until I realized you can play with a broken foot, because I did it. A Lisfranc's fracture, a broken foot. I didn't realize it until years later that, until a couple of years ago, that an Olympian by the name of Travis Stevens also had a Lisfranc's fracture in his foot and did judo with it, which is ridiculous because in judo, when you have a Lisfranc's fracture, you don't have a shoe on. At least I had a shoe on to kind of tape things together. It still hurt like hell. I had to wear a cast during the bye week for 2 weeks. My leg got small, came out the cast, and then continued to play. I said, man, does your foot hurt? I said, hell yeah, my foot hurts. But my broken foot is not more important than a team. When I was coaching for the Bahamas, the president of the Bahamas Judo Federation, D.R.C. Rahman, gave me some good lessons because he went to school in the United States and went to Northwestern. And he gave me some good lessons on the United States from a internal and external viewpoint. He said, man, one of the most beautiful things about the United States is the rugged individualism that you all have. It is your greatest gift and also your greatest curse. Rugged individualism for us hurts us. Rugged individualism also helps us. Rugged individualism, it allows you to say, hey man, I deserve to do what I want to do. And if I don't want to wear a mask, I don't have to wear one. That rugged individualism approach can also end up hurting a lot of people without knowing. Could, doesn't mean it is. The rugged individualism that we have allows us to put ourselves in front of the group, thinking that the better we are as individuals, the better the group is. Not understanding that that rugged individualism hurts, which is why you can have the four fastest people on the track in a 4x1 and still lose, because it's about getting the stick around the track the fastest, not having the four fastest people on the 4x1 team because of rugged individualism. Not understanding that the team is more important than the individual. And the one thing that we used to say back in the day, which I don't hear anymore in sports, is that nobody's bigger than the program. And as I close off this message for today, everybody is in some type of program. If you're in a house, okay, and you're married and you're in a house and there's a family, that's the program. If things aren't going your way, particularly, sometimes that's how it goes. It can go like that 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, and somebody says, I'm not happy. I looked through the Bible just a couple minutes ago. I looked through there, back, forth, up, down. Never saw the word happy in there because it's not in there. It's not, the word happy is not in there. I'm just not happy. So I'm sorry. You made a contract with Jesus and God, those two people that you consider to be the head of your life, those people. You made a contract. You want to violate the contract? You violate the contract, it's okay. You want to take it up with me? You are not bigger than the program. Anytime you feel like you're bigger than the program, man, everything goes awry. If you had a job, if you had a company, if you had a company, any company, you name the company. I mean, you could be Walmart, Aetna, I mean, any company. You will find out very quickly that you are not bigger than the program. The program is more important to you. I think that parents, and this is why we made this book, and my company Switch On, we made this book called The VIP Life. And the VIP Life seems like it's outside of what I'm talking about in terms of rugged individualism. We had to do it because what was happening more often than not, especially moms and single moms, were putting themselves on the back burner and making their kids the most important thing. So to restructure that order, we had to come up with a VIP Life so that they can understand that they need to make themselves important because they are part of the structure or the unit that creates the program, not the kids. See, and then these same kids are like this, and then they go into these team environments. This is the input, like the input variables, which are the children that go into these sporting environments. They've changed. The sport in and of itself is still the same. I don't care what you can call targeting, all this. If you think that there's a kid who's going to let you, there are some kids who are not going to let you run across the middle free, no matter what the penalty you call is. By the time you're knocked out and you wake up in 15 minutes or 15 seconds later, you're still going to be knocked out. The kid might be out of the game, but you're going to be out of the game too. Mission accomplished. See you next week. Highlight film, upload on Huddle. College coaches love it. That kid's going to get recruited. And you're still knocked out. You got to make sure that when you're raising your children, you got to make sure you raise them to understand that nobody's bigger than the program. Because some of y'all raise whiny bitches who then go on to play sports and get amongst other whiny bitches. And then they create this, I don't even know what it is, it's this potpourri of bitchdom. And then they wonder why they can't win. You can't win because people, when you present yourself like that, then they just walk over and bitch slap you and they have no problem. If people walk up to you and they mistreat you, you could be sad. You could say that those people are assholes. But it's also a point where you have to ask yourself, what is it in my presentation that makes you feel like you can come up to me and treat me like that? See, I ain't but 5'8". All right, I'm really short. All right. Short dude, short in stature. All right. But I'm telling you right now, if I'm in a room with a lot of people and you got an opportunity of who you gonna slap in that room, shit. Man, you rather put on some goddamn gasoline soap drawers and run through hell before you walk over there and slap me. Cause I look like I got that my presentation don't look like what you want. And parents, if you find yourself sitting in the stands, I don't care what school you go to, and your child's on a losing football team, and the score is getting run up, and all the kids over there getting beat, you can run through everything. You can talk about the cheerleaders ain't cheerleading. You can say the coaches ain't coaching. You can talk about the helmets ain't good, or they didn't take my kids' ankles, or the shoes not right, or it's raining, or the turf, or the grass, or they ain't getting no sleep, COVID-19, COVID-17, John 3:16. You go through all of it, but this at some point you got to ask yourself, collectively, why are they treating our children like bitches in this game? And it might be because your kids are presenting themselves as such. And so that's a hard reality. So you can't, when you teach in the K-12 system, you can't talk to parents like that. But see, I don't coach in the K-12 system. I coach in my dojo, and I tell parents right in their face, your child is a whiny little bitch. And they can continue to be like that if you want that, but they're not going to be able to do that here. So you have a decision to make, sir, ma'am. Because I'm not going to tolerate the behavior. Very simple, very easy. It's okay. Some people stay, some people leave. The culture of the place is more important than the individual, because nobody is bigger than the program. This is Dr. Ferguson. I just had some things on my mind. You all have a super fantastic day. Remember, I love you, but God loves you best. Oh, do me a favor and visit www.coffeewithrodd.com.